Hello everybody. Today is the 15th of March 2025. We are gathered here today for the 175th session of Mindfulness for Beginners in English, conducted by Nisaranawaneya. I would like to warmly welcome Venerable Homagama Dhammakusala Thero, as usual, for the program. I would also like to welcome everyone who's participating via Zoom, Facebook live stream, and anyone who may be watching later. Our program, as usual, will commence with the in-session practice of mindfulness. We will then follow it with today's topic, a talk on today's topic. Then we will have time for the reports and any questions towards the end. To begin today's session, I will then invite Venerable Bhante to start the in-session practice of mindfulness. Over to you, Bhante.
Thanks, Sonali. Okay, hello everyone. So today, to start the program, let's do a few minutes of mindful sitting. For this, you can turn on video and join more actively if you are willing. Sit in a comfortable manner and gently close your eyes. You are seated and you have your eyes closed. Bring your attention to the present moment and notice what you feel there. You might hear surrounding sounds. You may feel various bodily sensations. Thoughts and memories come and go. Among all these things, we simply try to be aware. This time, we are not going to control our attention. We are not going to direct our attention towards a particular object. Instead, we simply try to be mindful of the present moment. Whatever comes and goes, allow them to come and go freely. Among all these things, we try to be aware and we try to continue with that awareness. Okay, everyone, now you can open your eyes again. So that's few minutes of mindful sitting for today, just to give you an idea. And with that, Sonali, you can take over.
Thank you, Bante. So next on the agenda is the talk on today's topic. We have a new topic for this week and the next week. It is about healing process. As you could see the poster at the beginning. So to start today's the talk on today's topic, I'd like to invite Bante again. Over to you, Bante.
Okay, everyone. Today we are starting a fresh topic. This is about healing ourselves. So this topic will take some time to discuss the idea behind it. Now, when we think about our life, sometimes we can say that we feel too much of things. Let's say happiness. Sometimes we feel too much happiness. Let's say anger. Sometimes we feel too much angry. Sadness. Sometimes you feel too sad. Right? So this way, in our daily lives, once in a while, we feel extreme emotions. Let it be happiness. Let it be negative emotions. Sometimes we feel extreme. And probably there's this old saying that says, too much of anything is not good. Whether it's positive things or whether it's negative things, if you're experiencing too much of something, that's not good. Because when that happens, you become an emotional being. Maybe if that happens too often, maybe you are an emotional person. And what's wrong with being emotional? Being emotional is okay, but being too emotional is not good. Why? Because when you are emotional, you lose the reason. When you are emotional, you lose the sensitivity. And that happens. Whether it's positive or whether it's negative, being lost in positive emotions or being lost in negative emotions, too much of them is not good. You become emotional and you are driven by those emotions. And you lose the idea of reason. You lose the sense. That happens. So that's why we say too much of anything is not good. Usually we take it as whatever the positive ones, it's okay to feel too much of them. But the negative ones you try to get rid of. But that's not good. Whether it's positive or whether it's negative, too much of something is not good for you. As I said earlier, you become emotional. You lose the reasoning power in your mind. Right? We are not against being emotional. That's fine. But I am saying being extremely emotional. That might be not good for you, right? So it's okay to feel happiness. It's okay to feel sadness. It's okay to feel anger. All these emotions. But make sure that you don't go to the extreme of these emotions. If you go to the extreme of these emotions, then you might lose the reason, you might not see the proper way of behaving or reasoning, right? So it's okay to feel them, but too much of anything probably not good for your health, right? So let's say in drunken terms, they say when you drink, the tipsy level is okay, but hammered, that's not good, right? So you have to make sure that you maintain a certain level of blood alcohol, and if you go beyond that, that's not good for you, right? Same goes for the emotions. We get drunk with emotions, right? When you feel too much of something, you are hammered. You don't see other things. You don't listen to reason, right? So that's why too much of happiness, probably not good. Too much of anger might drive you into great trouble. Too much of sadness might create a depression, or even you might kill yourself, right? So you have to understand it's okay to feel them. It's natural to feel them. It's human to feel them. But you have to draw a line at a certain limit. If you go beyond that, then it's not easy to recover from those emotions, right? Even love, let's say if you feel extreme, then that's not good for you, right? These positive emotions like love, and they are in a way extremely needy state of mind. When somebody is in love, there's this idea, love is blind, right? They'll do stupid things, they'll do anything for that, right? So extreme indulgence in such emotions is not good. It creates blindness. It makes you drunk. And you have to understand such emotional states are extremely needy conditions. Something small goes wrong and you are in the opposite extreme. You feel extreme sadness. You feel suicidal. Right? So it's okay to feel these things. It's okay to feel the emotions, but we have to make sure that our mind is experiencing them into a certain limit. If you're experiencing too much of something, then probably it's a red flag. You have to understand this is not good. It's not something good, right? So that idea is important. In your life, if you are always emotional, that's not good for you. You become an emotional person and you are drunk, you are driven by those emotions. Right? So that's one idea I want to give. And let's say sometimes people, they feel extreme grief. It's natural to feel them sometimes. Let's say loss of a family member, you feel extreme grief in you. And sometimes people, they go into a depression or even they become suicidal because they can't handle those emotions. Right? In a way, when you are down to that level, when you are feeling such extreme grief, it's not easy to recover from it. And you go and tell them, be mindful and don't be so emotional, don't feel so much grief. They won't listen to you because it's not possible for them. Right? They already are in a vulnerable state. And if you try to go and recover them, that's not going to happen. Right? So that's why we say practice mindfulness when you are healthy. Practice mindfulness before you face such extreme difficulties. Practice mindfulness before you go into a depression. You have to make sure that you get ready in your mind while you are comfortable. And once you go into such extreme conditions, it's not easy to work with the practice. It's not easy to start the practice. That happens, right? So most people, when they are in big trouble, they come and look for a practice. But when they come, if they are too weak in their mind, it's not easy for them to absorb the practice. It's not easy, right? So that's why we say this is more like preventive. This is more like preventive measures, not like a corrective measure, right? Most people, they find a solution as a corrective measure. They want mindfulness as a corrective measure. Once they get into some kind of a drug addiction, they ask whether mindfulness can recover them. Once they get into extremely needy emotions, they ask whether mindfulness can help them. When they are suffering with extreme anger or rage, they ask whether mindfulness can help them. Right? So mostly they want a corrective measure. It might work, but it would be really hard for them to start the practice when they are in such an emotional state. But let's say if you use mindfulness as a preventive measure, then you start your practice before you face such troubles. Even as children, it's a very good gift for them. If the parents or the teachers can teach them how to be mindful, how to practice mindfulness, and encourage them to do like probably like 5-10 minutes of mindful sitting daily. If you can encourage your children at a younger age, then that's one of the greatest gifts that you can give them, because it'll work as a preventive measure. I know many children from the Satipatthana, they started the practice at a very young age, probably like, 7 years, 8 years, that young. They started the mindful practice. And I know some of them, they have continued for like 5-6 years now. Some of them are 12, 13, that type of age. And when they talk about mindfulness, they talk about deep practice and experiences. And when you hear their reports, you can clearly see that they have mindfulness well established in their minds. Right? So they are prepared for the teenage years. They are prepared for the emotions that are to come. Right? So that way, if you apply this as a preventive measure, that's the best use of it. It might work as a corrective measure, but it might be really difficult to do it as a corrective measure. For example, yesterday there was a program at a hospital, and some of the pregnant women was there, and some of the staff, doctors, nurses, and there were some other lay people as well. Right? And after the program, one of the old ladies that was there came to me, and she had a grievance. She was saying that her husband died a couple of years ago, and after her only son died at a young age. Right? So within a couple of years, both these incidents happened. So she was in an extremely needy situation and feeling extreme grief. Although a couple of months have passed, still she couldn't get over all those emotions and memories. And she was asking for a solution, right? It would be very nice to give a quick solution, But that's not possible. That's not practical. Right? So we have to encourage her to continue with the program, and little by little, if she can do the practice, then it might help her. You never know. Such people, they are really fragile and they might not even continue for another month. Right? It's a monthly program. So first time she attended, next time she might not come. Right? So that's that fragile. When you become such emotional, when you go through such trauma in your life. Okay, and she was specially mentioning about the sitting practice. Now today, we allowed our attention to flow naturally. We didn't try to direct our attention towards the breathing. We allowed things to come and go freely, and we tried to stay mindful. That was today's practice. And when that happens, when you do that, what happens is that naturally your suppressed thoughts, memories, they come. So yesterday in that program, initially early in the morning, we did the usual practice. And in the afternoon, I guided them to simply be mindful. Instead of controlling their attention, instead of directing their attention towards a particular object, I encourage them to simply be mindful. And she was mentioning about this second practice. She was saying as soon as she allowed her mind to freely flow, the mind directly went to those sad memories. The memories about her son, the memories about her husband, and all the things that they have said and experienced together. Right? So she was telling that second practice was extremely difficult for her because it directly went to those memories. And she was feeling sad and probably crying after the practice due to that. Right, so she was saying that second practice was particularly difficult for her. But as the long-term practitioners, we can understand something about this incident. Of course, I didn't tell her about this. She was not ready. Right, that's true. But all of us, we have been practicing for a while now, and we can understand the idea behind this. When you allow your mind to flow freely, all those wounds and related things come. All those past memories and thoughts come. Right? They are hurtful. You can't endure them. Usually, people's attitude about these things is to suppress or avoid them. That's how they try to deal with those things. But avoidance never works. Suppressing never works. When you start avoiding, when you start suppressing those emotions, thoughts, they become even more powerful. They start haunting you day and night. Why? Because you have suppressed those memories. You have suppressed those thoughts. Right? So avoidance never works. What's the solution? You can use the awareness as the solution. That's the only solution. You simply be aware. You simply allow those wounds to breathe. Right, so that's the way of the practice. But for a person who is experiencing such extreme emotions, it feels like dying. It feels like, you know, breaking down, right? So they would do anything to avoid those things. But if you know the practice, if you know how the healing works, you have to understand that you have to allow those memories to come and go. You have to breathe through them. That's the very way of healing, right? So that's the topic that we are discussing today. And we have this very nice quote from one of the movies. It's from Kung Fu Panda. And Master Po is giving this quote to us. It says, "Don't push past memories deeper inside of yourself. Let those memories breathe and let old wounds heal." That's the topic, the healing process, or that's the quote that we have decided for these 2 weeks, right? So you can't push those memories deeper and try to suppress them. That's not gonna work, right? Basically, you have to let those memories breathe. When it says let those memories breathe, that means naturally those memories come, but you simply breathe through them. You let them come and go and simply keep on holding to your breath. Feel the pain in the process. Feel the grief in the process. Notice how they come and go in different ways. Sometimes these thoughts come as train thoughts. You become extremely emotional. Sometimes they come and go one by one, right? So that way, in different ways, these memories come, right? If you want to heal from these, you have to allow them to breathe. You have to allow them to breathe. And naturally, when you allow them to breathe, when you use the awareness as a solution, then you are in the healing process. But I am not saying it will happen overnight. I am not saying it will happen within a week. It depends on the depth of the wound that we are talking about. So for some people, it might take even few months. For some people, it might take few weeks. It depends on the wound, the depth of the wound, but still, this is the only way to heal properly. Otherwise, you can suppress them, you can push them deeper into your mind and act like they are not there, but they are always following you. Right, like a shadow, they will follow you wherever you go. That's why as soon as you release your mind, you feel those things. That's why that lady was complaining. The second practice was particularly harder. Why? When she allowed her attention to naturally flow, the attention naturally grows to those past memories, the lost of the loved ones. And it's not easy. It's not easy to explain this to a person who is new to the practice. But the long-time practitioners can understand this. You can't find a solution by suppressing. You have to allow those memories to breathe. Although it is not easy, although sometimes you feel extreme pain and you feel like breaking down, you have to go through this process. And in a way, the world thinks that you are weak when you cry. At least the ladies, they can cry a little. But if a man cries, the world will point fingers at them, right? Tell that this is a sign of weakness. Right, so in a way, the world says that it's not good to express your emotions. It's not good to cry. It's not good to break down. But that's a wrong way of thinking, right? If you allow your emotions to surface, if you cry when you feel like crying, when you go through such extreme situations in life, it's okay to break down. It's okay to cry your eyes out, right? What happens is that we act strong for a short period and we end up breaking down for a few years. That's not good, right? So at least you go through that process or go through that funeral and cry as much as you need, break down. And if you can recover from it, then that's much better. Otherwise, you act strong for a short period and you end up breaking down yourself for like few years, few months. That's not good. Even in ancient Rome, they had this rule. They had this law. Right? The widows, they can cry for the death of their husband only for 10 days. Right? They can cry whatever the amount they need. They can break down. The others will take care of them. But only for 10 days, they are allowed to do that. Right? After that, they can't cry. It is against the law. Right? Even in Sri Lankan tradition, usually there are 7 days time period, right? For the 7 days, you are fed by the neighbors. They will take care of you. All the relatives, friends are there for you, right? So probably this is the grace period. You can cry for 7 days, you can break down, the others will take care of you. Others will be there for you. All the food and the facilities are provided. But within 7 days, you have to get over it. Right? Probably that's a good way to think about it. Most people, they try to stay strong in front of all the friends and family. And they end up harming themselves for years. That's not good. Right? So you understand the idea. You have to allow these memories to breathe. I'm sure all of us, we have at least like a couple of wounds from the past, right? We all have such incidents from the past. We haven't allowed our mind to heal properly. Maybe we acted strong in front of all the family and friends. And when you do the meditation, sometimes you feel that these memories, these thoughts come. The grief follows those thoughts and memories. And it's okay to allow those memories to breathe. Let them breathe. And by allowing the memories to breathe, you go through this healing process. Right? So that's the idea. That's the way of the practice. And I'll add one more thing. Now, when it comes to these unpleasant feelings, unpleasant memories, unpleasant thoughts, there is certain kind of a wisdom behind these things. Let's say even in your life, sometimes there are rough patches, right? You go through this unpleasant period. If you know the practice, if you take it properly, then you go through this and you find a deeper insight into your life. Same goes for the unpleasant memories. Same goes for the unpleasant thoughts. It's not easy to endure them. But if you know the proper way of practice, if you go through these memories, thoughts, then at the end of the tunnel, you find some deeper insight into your own life, right? So there is always wisdom hidden behind these unpleasant situations. Whenever you feel friction in your mind, there's wisdom to be discovered. Right? You have to inquire yourself, why am I feeling this friction? Maybe there's some incident that you don't like. Right? Maybe due to an attachment towards a certain person or a thing. Right? So instead of avoiding that friction, instead of being ignorant towards that friction, just inquire yourself. Ask yourself why there's this friction. Why am I feeling so much friction? Right? And when you inquire like that, sometimes you feel it's due to the attachment I have for this person. It's due to the attachment that I have towards this thing. It's due to some incident that happened in your life. Right? So whenever you feel friction, whenever you go through these unpleasant situations, you have to inquire and see what is behind this friction. What is behind this unpleasant experience? That way, there are always wisdom to be discovered behind these unpleasant experiences. If you have the right attitude, if you know the correct practice, there's wisdom for you to be discovered. But if you take it wrongly, then there's more ignorance generated. Right? So whenever such unpleasant things come to you, take it as a part of the practice. You have to be peaceful in the very life that you are living. You have to be peaceful in the very world that you are living. Right? You can't find peace elsewhere. That's not right. That's not possible. Right? So you have to make sure that you find or you discover this hidden wisdom. If you do it that way, then you realize you are becoming more and more peaceful in the very life that you are living. You are becoming more and more peaceful in the very world that you are living. Things happen, but you are no longer feeling the friction. Sometimes you feel a little friction, but it's comparatively lower. Right? So that's the proper way of facing this life. That's the proper way of finding real peace in you. Otherwise, we are always trying to find the peace elsewhere. We live this life, we think that if we go somewhere else, we'll find peace. We say that if I get rid of these people, I'll find peace. That way we think. There was this university program, maybe like 3-4 days ago. They were doing, I think, psychology or something, Jaipur University, about 50 children. They came to the monastery and they stayed a couple of days, right? And towards the second day, we had a discussion and one of them were sharing a doubt in them. That person was asking whether to stay in Sri Lanka or whether to go abroad, whether to work or whether to do something else, right? How can I decide? That was the doubt, right? So instead of answering that doubt, I said, it doesn't matter. You either stay here or you go abroad. You work or you find some other way, right? You get married or you stay single. You live a lay life or you become a monk. The challenge is to be happy in this life, right? I dare you to be happy in this life. That's the challenge. It doesn't matter whatever you do, right? Stay single or get married. live a lay life or live as a monk, right? At the end of the day, you have to find some kind of a peace and happiness in you. If you find that, then you are victorious, right? If you can't find it, then no matter what you do, you become a failure, right? So in our lives, it doesn't matter what we do. If you can find peace and happiness in us, that's the ultimate goal, right? There's nothing beyond. No matter how much you earn, no matter how whatever you have, if you are not peaceful, if you are not happy in your mind, then you are a failure. Sorry to say, but that's the truth, right? So you have to find happiness and peace in you, right? Even some monks, they are not happy. Sad to say, they have given up everything in their life, right? But still, they are extremely anxious, they are extremely angry, they are extremely emotional, right? So they are not enjoying the monkhood, or they are not happy and peaceful there, right? So it doesn't help. It doesn't help, right? So whatever you do, if you can find it, then you are victorious, right? Stay single or get married, work or stay at home, right? Live a lay life or become a monk. Whatever you do, if you can find happiness and peace in you, then that's the way. So I'll end this talk daring you to find your own happiness and peace. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Bhante. That is a very useful topic for all of us. We will move on to the next item in the agenda. The next item is to start present the reports that we have been sent to Bhante, and also to conduct the Q&A session. And for this, I invite Panchani to start.
Srai Bhante. Hello, everybody. I hope you can hear me well. I hope that we can find our inner peace and happiness with Bhante's guidance and advice. Thank you, Bhante, for that wonderful talk. I'm sure Sonali will share the beginner's guide and the link. I will run through the guide briefly. Nisrinvanya has given us two videos, one about mindful sitting and one about mindful walking. The links are on the chat if anyone wants to use it. So the idea is for you to practice daily your mindful sitting and your mindful walking, making sure that you practice daily and putting your experience on a Google form, or you can email via beginners@gmail.com. And when you submit your reports, Bhante will give you feedback and guidance. And I'm sure all of us will benefit from your reports that you, your reflective reports that you write. And if anyone wants to listen to recordings later on, you can use the link that's here. So you can listen at your own time and use the guidance as you would like. Now I will read the report. I think we have received one report today, Bhante. I'm going to read it now. Walking meditation. Walked on a wooden floor, observing sensations on feet. Initial period, mind was noting right and left feet being placed with distracting thoughts, interspersed with sounds which were noted but not distracting. Later, warmth on top of feet and cold floor, and lifting, moving, and placing of feet observed. Walked for 50 minutes. Sitting meditation. Primary object, watching the objects taken by the mind. initially noted position of body and areas of body touching the cushion and position of hands. Mind naturally went to breath, which broke up and appeared away from the face, which was distorted. Kept mind on breath. Images appeared and disappeared. Continued distortion of face and position of breath. Pain noted in leg, and mind observed a deep, and mind observed a deep in and out breath. And face not distorted at this stage. Mind observed changing position and nature of pain, and then went back to breath. Sat for 50 minutes. Daily mindfulness. More aware of thoughts as they arise of greed and irritations. Difficulty restraining the actions that follow a few times, but more times when the thoughts can be diverted or replaced with more wholesome ones. With much gratitude to you, Bhante, and organizers. The end of the report.
Panchani, can you repeat that sitting part?
Yes, Bhante. Sitting meditation. Primary object, watching the objects taken by the mind. Initially noted position of body and areas of body touching the cushion and position of hands. Mind naturally went to breath, which broke up and appeared away from the face, which was distorted. Kept mind on breath. Images appeared and disappeared. Continued distortion of face and position of breath. Pain in leg noted, and mind observed a deep in and out breath, and face not distorted at this stage. Mind observed changing position and nature of pain, and then went back to breath. Sat for 50 minutes. That's the sitting part, Bhante.
Okay, thanks. Right, now when we consider the practice, usually our mind, it likes the order or the proper appearance of things, right? But in meditation, gradually you are directed towards disorder or like distortion of things, right? So when that happens, there is natural resistance in our mind. It doesn't like that way. It likes to, you know, re-establish the order. And if you have like extreme conditions, like those compulsive thoughts, you get obsessions, right? So that way the mind is always trying to go back to the order. But when the practice is proper, sometimes it changes from order to disorder. Time after time, for many cycles, this happens, right? So the proper advice would be for you to allow this cycle to continue. The order comes, probably we start with order, then disorder comes. Proper appearance of things and disordered appearance of things. Right? So that way, again and again, it goes on cycles. You allow as many cycles to continue. And when that happens, gradually your mind releases its grip. Because now sometimes it is order, sometimes it is disorder. Sometimes the proper appearance of things, and sometimes it is distorted. Right? So that way, allow as many cycles to continue, and naturally your mind let go of the process. Let go of the grip. And more disorder that comes, more closer you become to the peace. Because the real nature of this world is always disorder. It's our mind that will create patterns. It's our mind that will create order in this, right? But when you consider about the world, when you consider about things, it is always disorder. It appears like order for a while, but naturally it goes back to the disorder. That's why these modern scientists, they have become atheists. They have given up on God. And they say, when you read about God, it is said that God is all good and all powerful. And they make this argument saying, see the world, see all the natural disasters, see how many people die, see the things happen in your life. Right? When you consider these facts, when you consider these things, it can't be both. Either the God is not all good, either he is not all powerful. Right? It can't be both. Right? Maybe he is not all good, maybe he is not all powerful. That's what they are saying. Because if he is all good, these destructions can't happen. Right? And if he is all powerful, and then he might stop everything, right? So they are saying maybe he's not all good, maybe he doesn't have power over this, right? So that's what they are saying, right? Then when you read into the idea of entropy, right? I think it's the second law of thermodynamics, right? And it says eventually you'll go into disorder. Right, it naturally goes in that direction. We are human beings, right? This is more like order. This body is more like order, right? One day it will go into disorder. And what happens when you die? What happens to the body, right? Within a couple of days, it becomes like a volcano. All the gases, all the juices, they start coming out. Right, so that's the idea of entropy. This is very unstable. This state is very unstable. Right, naturally it'll end up in disorder. Right, whatever you create, let's say probably a nice car, very fragile. Right, very fragile. A family bond that you have created, very fragile. So we hold on to this fragile status. And we expect it to be permanent, right? But nature's law goes against it. That's the idea of entropy. That's the idea of disorder, right? It is against the nature's law. So we start fighting. We try to hold on to it. We try to go against the nature. It doesn't work, right? So disorder is the natural status of this world. For a short while, it appears like order, but soon you realize it will direct into disorder, right? So this is what we are experiencing in this practice, especially when it comes to vipassana, or let's say mindfulness. Some of the people, concentration people, they try to create order, right? That's what they are doing, right? In their meditation, they want this state. The peaceful state of mind, right? And if that is not achieved, they are failure, right? They want the absorption, right? If they can't achieve it, they are failed, right? But in this practice, whatever comes, we accept. The more disorder, we are more happy that the practice is working, right? So when you experience the breath is properly ordered first, then it breaks into pieces, disorder. Your face, proper, and goes into distortion, right? Disorder, right? Whatever it is, this is the cycle. Disorder, and again goes back to order, again disorder, right? Allow as many cycles as to continue. Don't try to stop it. Just experience this process that is happening. That's the law of the universe. Right, that's the nature of the universe that you are experiencing. And more you experience the reality, more peaceful you become. Your mind will gradually release the grip to this process. That happens. And for that, you have to allow some time and simply continue with your practice.
If anyone's got any questions following Bhante's talk, this is the time to ask your questions and receive Bhante's guidance. If anyone's got any questions, you can raise your hand, Zoom hand. Samantha, you can unmute and ask your question.
Ah, sorry. I couldn't unmute earlier on. Bhante, I was really interested about what Bhante just said about order going into disorder. That's something that that was in the back of my mind some time ago, because I was watching this sort of science program, and they talked about entropy as well, and didn't really understand too much about it, but just in a brief nutshell, I was just sort of curious how the universe is such like that, you know, and how we are opposing it. Like, we want order and we want this way to happen, but it's not like that. And why is it going from order to disorder? Is it because the energy, the lowest form of energy, is in disorder, and energy always just wants to be, to make things is a high energy. You have to do, make an effort and create energy, whereas nature is just, you know, as Bhante was explaining, just as it is, just a process. So I was just wondering whether we are conflicting with our, as Buddha said, the wanting, the craving. Is that what's make us go against the universe, and not just accepting through mindfulness the way things are? So I'm just wondering, is it just our wanting and the craving that propels us in the negative, to suffering, basically? Would I be correct in saying that, Bhante?
Right, so good insight from that science program. Although it's science, sometimes when we watch it with an open mind, we can really see how we can relate those things into these philosophical ideas. Now, as you said, the lowest form of energy is stable, right? It is natural, no? When you make a coffee, naturally it cools down, right? It goes into the lowest form of energy. And when the energy is concentrated, it is not stable. So that's the law of entropy. That's more like, you know, universe. It's nature, or the universe's law, right? So as the example I gave earlier, your body is a good example. This is concentrated energy. And we try to maintain this fragile state. But naturally, when you die within few hours, that process starts. And, you know, all it's like a volcano. You can see those videos on YouTube, I think, and it's called Body Farm or something like that. They put this body on the ground, and they put some kind of a cage to make sure that the animals can't reach it. The bigger animals can't reach it. So the body goes through its natural decay process, right? Decomposition, right? And you can see how it is like a volcano. Right? So much energy is concentrated, it goes through a process like a volcano. Right? So this is the nature, this is the way of the universe. And our mind, as you said, basically craving. that tries to go against this process, right? It tries to go against universe's law. So it makes you suffer. Buddha says a person goes to a river and he demands this river to flow upwards. The nature of the river is to flow downwards, right, towards the lower grounds. But this person, he is demanding. He goes to the river bank and he is demanding that this river should flow upwards. And the Buddha is asking, what happens to this person? Right? What happens when he tries like this? Right? Only the suffering can arise. Nothing else. He becomes exhausted with this effort. He cries, he blames, all these things come. Right? So in this life, the craving is more like demanding a river to flow upwards. But that's against the nature of the world, right? So in this practice, we try to see it. We try to little by little accept the way of the nature. When a practitioner or a meditator starts, they are in this idea of order. And we encourage them a little. We say that bring your attention to the breath. Keep it there. Observe the breath. Stay there. That way we encourage the order for them. But naturally, the practice will start going its own direction. And the breath breaks into pieces. Right? Disorder comes. And your mind goes all over the place. Thoughts come. Disorder. Right? So when that happens, this person is going through that process. Going through it once won't work. But going through it many times, thousands and thousands of times, the mind is naturally releasing its grip. Seeing the experience in the truth, seeing the truth, you have to go through it thousands and thousands of times. And when that happens, naturally, the grip is released a little by little. And so that's the idea. You can relate it to entropy. You can relate it to disorder. So going against that nature is not good.
Thank you, Bhante. That's really wonderful. Yeah, encouraging to unravel basically what the universe is. Thank you. Encouraging. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Samantha, for your wonderful question. Bhante and Sonali, there is something in the chat. I'm not sure whether I should read it or... Yes? Okay. Teruan Saranai Bhante. For a while, it felt like there was no motivation to write. Pieces of words faded away from time to time. While living alone for a long time away from the family, a situation arose to be with them again with the snake incident. In a family background where the happiness is kept on others, trying to control others and where they are interested in others' lives, it stays as those are irrelevant. Sometimes it is like being deaf to what is going on. Even heard it is like slipping away. Mind its own business, and if nothing else matters. Even though the family members haven't said yet anything the way I live, still their energies can be felt. From time to time, blurred things related to what's going on fade away. Even though I used to live clean and neat, most of those are shattered. I'm okay with that. It is getting adjusted to the situation while bearing some tiredness, while being in a toxic environment. But it doesn't mean there is no attempt to come out of this background, not acting to please others, where it is needed no hesitation to say straight no and can't. When there is no urge to do what was asked, Sometimes, even if it is troubled for a while with some incidents, it doesn't go long and is like a water bubble. Sometimes it can witness how people make a mess and suffer being people pleasers and depending on others for their happiness. Knowing those are out of my control stay as not relevant. It is like getting used to being okay with not having the freedom to attend Zoom meetings and sit for a paryankya, even though I miss those. But it needs to be mentioned that participating in Zoom programs and being with them gives strength and courage to this journey. There is an urge to keep this hidden from my family on this journey. So there is an urge to go for alone living again, as it's freedom and it's unmeasurable. Thank you so much, Bante, for your guidance. Teruvan Saranai, Bante.
Okay, right. First, let's say if we stay like deaf to these things that we hear, will we find peace? If we stay like blind to things that we see, can we find peace? That's a good question that you're asking. That's a good analogy about the real practice. Now, even Buddha asked this question from Venerable Ananda, I guess. Yes. He was saying that if that works, then all the deaf people, they'll be in peace. All the blind, they'll be in peace. Right? Acting like you don't hear, you don't see, if that works. But that's not how the mind works. Still, it finds ways to create the same suffering. Even the blind people, there was this, let's say, a monk who was practicing, and he became blind, probably due to old age. Then this other monk asked him, now you have no distractions from all the sights that you see due to the blindness. And this old blind monk was saying, although the eyes can't see, the mind is creating all the sights. Right? It's like a movie played inside me. Still, I am seeing all those sights. Right? So that's how the mind works. You can be blind, but still you are caught in the process. You can be deaf, still you are caught in the process. So you have to understand the ignorance never works. Right? Otherwise, the ignorance, if you try it, you'll always find a way to complain. Yesterday, it was snakes. Today, it is relatives. Right? Yesterday, it was snakes. Today, it's family. In a way, the family members are also like snakes. That's true. Right? So, you have given up one type of snakes to another type of snakes. Right? But still, the same complain, same suffering is there in your mind. So what can you do? Right? The practice, the very practice is simply to become aware that you don't suffer because of them. You suffer because of your own craving or attachment towards these things in your mind. Right? It's not big outside, it's inside. Right, so that's why we encourage ourselves to find a proper solution. How to come out of this struggle. Right? Simply becoming aware, gradually practicing this awareness, you have to find peace within. Changing outside won't work. You can try and see. But there will always be another type of snake to complain about. Right? So continue the practice. See the irritation within. See how you are suffering due to these things. See how you become a people pleaser. See how you suffer that you can't meditate for a long time. See how these people are not allowing you to join the Zoom sessions properly. Right? All these things, it's not outside, it's inside. Keep on observing, keep on being aware. See that this how this mind is creating suffering for you. Whether it's the snakes, whether it's the family, it is always finding one way or the other to create the same struggle. Right? So that way you have to continue. That is the way of the practice. I know it is difficult, but somehow hold on to this. Hold on to the practice. Hold on to the weekly sessions. Hold on to your daily meditation. And that way, if you continue for a while, you get insight into your own life. You realize it's not the outside people. It's you. It's not the snakes. It's you. It's your own mind that creates all this suffering. Right? In order for you to see it, you may have to go through this struggle for many weeks, many months. But if you go through it, if you hold on to the practice, if you hold on to the weekly sessions, if you do your daily meditation, I'm sure you'll be much better off in a while. Thanks for sharing. Keep on practicing and reporting.
That's all the reports, Panthe and Sonali. Over to you.
Thank you, Panchani. Thank you to everyone who had sent reports as well and shared your experiences. We have now come to the end of the session. So on behalf of all the organizers, I'd like to thank Venerable Homa Gamadama Kusala Thero for all his continued guidance throughout this program. And we cannot forget the Chief Abbot of Nisaranwanaya, Venerable Udiriya Gamadama Jiva Mahathero, whose idea was to initiate this program. May these merits help them improve their own practice as well. Thank you to all the organizers who are working really hard behind the scene to bring this session to you, and to everyone who participated via Zoom, Facebook live stream, and anyone who may be watching later on. As usual, we will meet next week at 1 p.m. Sri Lankan time, and I will wish everyone a happy and mindful week ahead. I will now end the session for everyone.